Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We get an off night in the NBA, but we could have our finals matchup as early as tomorrow night, Game 6, between the New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers. I'm of the mindset whoever wins this game wins the series. Indiana can obviously close it out. I think it's going to be difficult for the Pacers to get a Game 7 win in New York. We're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the genius of Sam Presti and the Oklahoma City Thunder getting to the NBA Finals, and they did it in such dominating fashion. Plus, the criticism of Anthony Edwards. We're going to talk about all that and more. And joining us right now over the phone, as he does each week, we have James Holis, our NBA analyst. James, always a pleasure.
Appreciate you having me on, man. Every day that the Knicks are still alive in the playoffs is a worse day for America. So today we're waiting one more day. One more day.
If you're a Knick hater, better hope that Indiana finishes this at home, because I just don't see. I think these teams are so evenly matched. I think all the way down to, look, in the regular season, one game separates them. Right now, it's Indiana 3-2. Very easily could be New York 3-2, or it could be New York. This series could have been over in five, however you want to look at it. I think these two teams are so evenly matched, James, that I have to favor the home team moving forward, I think, in each of the two games, which means if New York finds a way to win tomorrow, I got to believe they finish this off in seven at home.
Yeah, and you know what? It's been such a topsy-turvy playoffs, right? The Knicks have already lost more at home than, like, you know, like almost any team in the playoff run. Boston lost two at home. We've seen so much, almost like home court doesn't matter anymore. So I think the Pacers is just a better team. Now, if Nesmith is really hobbled and Brunson goes next level like he did last game, it might not matter. But we also know that that Haliburton could play much better. Turner could play much better. So I think even if for some reason Indiana loses at home next game, I think they got the gut check where they can go toe-to-toe and pull one out. We've seen them. I think they did against the Cavs, right? Mm-hmm. They've been the cardiac comeback team. So I definitely think Indiana, any team can do it, it'll be Indiana that can go and win in the Garden in Game 7.
Well, I think you answered my next question. I was going to ask you, in your mind, which team is built better for the longevity of a seven-game set? And I think sometimes that gets overlooked, right? I think there are teams that are built for a seven-game series. I think Tom Thibodeau is one of those coaches that has a team that can last over the course of a seven-game set. I think that matters. I think the toughness, really, that's what it boils down to when you get into a series like this, right? I mean, there's a difference in a series going five and a difference, obviously, in a series going seven.
Agreed. And now, at the other end of the spectrum, though, we know that the Pacers love to play with high tempo.
Yep.
You know that they run 8-9 deep of quality guys that really get real minutes, which Tibbs is showing. I think last game he had like four guys off the bench all play over double-digit minutes, which is a big shift in the paradigm shift for Coach Thibodeau in New York. But I also, like, again, it's almost like a rope-a-dope style. The Pacers keep playing their style. They believe in it. They're committed to it. They move the ball. They run off of makes and misses, and it kind of can wear you down. So let's see if the Knicks have what it takes. This is, you know, if to go, game, even game six, they're deep into the series. A lot of minutes are piling up. Let's see. That's all we'll say. Let's see. So I think, as we're talking tortoise and the hare, sure, the Knicks would be the tortoise here, but the hare might just be so much better than the tortoise that it doesn't matter.
Go back to game five, and this is a potential closeout game for the Pacers. I would expect a team like this to be looking at blood in the water, right? But as you mentioned, Tyrese Haliburton can play a lot better. He was not good the last outing. He was not good in Game 5 at all. Now, I think it's an anomaly, right? The fact that he only got seven shots off in that game, it's not going to happen moving forward. It's going to be completely different when these two teams take the court tomorrow. But is that at least somewhat concerning for you? Because you know the teams can collect data. You can see teams evolve right over the course of a series. And the fact that the Pacers scored 94 points and Haliburton was held to just 8, that worry you at all, James, in this series?
Yes, because the game before, where, you know, Haliburton had that amazing stat line, and he was just so efficient. Even though he shot 5-for-12 from three, he was basically unbothered. I said that. I said, you know what? He was great tonight, but he didn't seem to be pressured or bothered. You know, Nick never seemed to hurry him up, and they're paying a combined, what, $80 million between OG Anunoby, Bridges, and Josh Hart. But these three guys are supposed to be perimeter defenders, and he didn't seem to feel any kind of defensive pressure that game. He did whatever he wanted in game four. So this in game five, he absolutely was pressured. He looked harried. They did a much better job of keying on him in space and maintaining, not letting him get comfortable. They did a really good job of that, and that's where the low shot attempts come in. He wasn't finding space. He had a lot of wide open shots in game four. So in game five, to see where they pressured him, that was very impressive.
Has this series been entertaining for you? And I ask that from a fan perspective just as much as an analyst perspective, because I know you're a Celtic fan, right? Your team was the defending champs. It seemed like we were going to be on a collision course for Cleveland and Boston. I had that mindset in December. Like, all right, these are the two best teams in the East. I think it's a far cry that anyone could outlast one of these teams, much less both. But that's exactly what happened. From a fan and an analyst standpoint, have you enjoyed this series?
I have. Kudos to you for rubbing my face in it. That
that's not the case. I had to ask because, again, I think when you look at the NBA and you look at the two most complete teams if healthy, it's Oklahoma City and Boston. And that would have been the best NBA finals that we could have possibly have gotten. And the fact that we have the Pacers and the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals, and it does spark nostalgia, right? And I think that there's some contrasting styles at times between these two teams. I've been entertained by it, but I just had to ask from your perspective, what has it been entertaining enough? Because the Western Conference Finals, James, they were boring. It was boring as all could be. That might have been the worst series of the playoffs up to this point.
No, we cannot let the Cavaliers and Miami Heat off the hook.
Okay. All right. Outside of that, can you think of a worse series? I can't.
Hey, the Timberwolves were just outclassed, because even the one game they did win, obviously the Oklahoma City Thunder just kind of let go of the rope and they weren't too concerned about it because they got blown out of the water. They got kind of just shell-shocked. And then they regrouped and they made sure they did the same thing back. So you're right, that series was terrible. But this one here, we have two pretty evenly matched teams, at least where stylistically, right? Styles big fight, and both of them bring such different, unique styles. And we've seen both of those styles shine in the wins of the other team. So I've been very insane. I did not realize how deep and complete Indiana was, and they're showing it on the big stage. And for the Knicks, obviously, I'm a little more familiar with the Knicks, and so I'm enjoying watching them fall behind and lose. But no, but Brunson can be fun when he's not foul baiting, which is, so he's fun 60% of the time. It's fun to watch the teams that are put together on the fly, right? So I've been thoroughly entertained by this series. Would have much rather see Boston, but, the series, I have no complaints.
One of the other things that I don't believe has been talked about, and I don't know that there's a ton of relevance with this particular topic, especially at this stage in the game, but I remember when the Pacers made the trade for Pascal Siakam, and it seemed a little bit odd to me at the time, James, because I'm not going to say that there was a Siakam lottery or anything like that, like who was going to win the Siakam sweepstakes by any stretch, but I remember when the deal was done, and it was just kind of peculiar to me that it was Indiana that shelled out the best trade package and landed Siakam. And I thought, okay, well, here's a guy that was putting up good numbers, right, on a bad team in Toronto. We know he's already won an NBA championship, but what does he have left in the tank? Well, the Pacers aren't even close to being in this spot if they don't pull that trade for Siakam a little over a year ago. And at the time, I did not understand the trade. I'll be completely honest with you. It did not make a ton of sense to me.
So 100%, this is a trade that you point at when sometimes they say, hey, you know what? Just go for the talent and try to make it work. But we know Siakam was a good player, not a great player, but a good player. Perennial all-star hopeful. The numbers look good. He had his flaws, obviously. And we know Indiana was a team that was, good but not great, and they needed a talent upgrade. So this was where a front office and a coach can be aligned, and they made the move, and they've made it work. And it's like you said, it's – people might have questioned it at first because Siakam, right? Top 30, top 40 kind of player, but nothing, not a franchise, which you would consider a franchise guy. But, Indiana had a vision. They built a team that is strength in numbers. We have one guy as an engine, a la Steve Nash. who, you know, might not score the most, but he makes sure he gets everybody else involved. And Siakam is kind of what the NBA is all about these days, the long-rangey wing that you can play at power forward, can get his own bucket, you know, in certain situations. But he's also happy taking eight shots in the game. So he seems very selfless. He seems like a guy that any team would love to have. So amazing move, amazing vision by the Pacers front office to make that move.
Again, right now, being joined by James Holis as we talk NBA basketball. James, I do want to move over to the Western Conference. We don't have to spend a ton of time talking about OKC just completely land-blasting Minnesota. But what I do want to focus on with the Thunder is Sam Presti. And we're talking about a 48-year-old visionary in the NBA who has found a way to rebuild a franchise, putting them on a brink of an NBA championship. I don't see anyone beating them in a 7-game set at this point in time, specifically with who's left on the table, be it Indiana or New York. And the fact that Presti was able to build this team up after drafting in consecutive years, drafting Hall of Famers, right? You look at the fact that they were drafting Kevin Durant, James Harden, Russell Westbrook. You go back and look at the draft classes they had, not with that core group. Then they kind of reinvent themselves. Carmelo Anthony, Paul George, Russell Westbrook. Now, it doesn't include any of these guys. The fact that Sam Presti has been able to rebuild a, quote, small market squad multiple times and now has them on the brink of an NBA championship without any of the Hall of Famers just mentioned, it is nothing short of incredible in today's age.
Very much a testament of persistence and a testament of, I mean, longevity. Like, there's only words you can really use to describe it. You can't say enough, right? They have a billion draft picks over the next 6-7 years. They have the actual MVP. They have another burgeoning all-star beside him. They have another all-star in the rise behind them. They got so many attractive and really effective pieces around those guys and ridiculously great contracts. It almost doesn't seem fair. It's like you're playing a video game with the sliders all the way down, right? In cheap mode almost, because outside of a egregious injury, knock on wood, to one of their key guys, this team is going to compete deep into the postseason every year after this year. And it looks like you could almost start the championship coronation right now.
Yeah, and really, for a team of this market, I think it should be, they're going to be a reference point. Let's put it that way, because here in the state of Utah, I have to hear all the time about how the Jazz are at such a disadvantage being in a smaller market. And I think to some degree, there's truth to that. I also believe it can be a crutch. And I think you point to the Thunder and you point to Sam Presti, who is a basketball genius, and you say, look, it can be done, because you're exactly right. This is a team. We could be seeing a dynasty here, and I don't want to dive into hyperbole. I don't want to talk about, they haven't even won a championship yet, but you just hit the nail right on the head. They're not going anywhere for at least 10 years. It's not happening. This team is going to be legitimate because they are even set up to get better in future years. They don't even have to rely on free agency to get better. All they have to do is protect their own and utilize the draft assets they have, and they're not going anywhere.
I mean, and that's what's terrifying about it. And look across the league where the Pacers hope to meet them in the finals. Pacers have done the exact same thing on a lesser scale, right? They traded Paul George. They did the paperclip experiment in reverse, kind of. They traded Paul George for a couple of guys, and got Sabonis, and they got Oladipo, and then they flipped Sabonis, and now look with them. They have built the team through draft, through shrewd trades, right? No big blockbusters, and they are one step from the NBA Finals, right? So obviously not to the same level, like I said, not the same level of the Thunder, but a small market team through shrewd trades and through patient drafting and key free agent signings, a guy like Obi Toppin, that kind of play, making the move for even a guy like Nesmith, right? That Nesmith didn't call Nesmith in town. That's another team. So there are paths to success. I guess small market teams, like you were saying, the Jazz, sure, draft is one way, but there's other paths to success as far as trading and making this shrewd move in the front office, really being dialed into a plan that makes sense and being able to pivot when that plan might go awry.
Do you believe we're out of the era in the NBA where we see monumental free agent signings to accelerate a rebuild that automatically puts a team in championship contention? It seems to me like we're getting further away from that ideology season by season.
I think so. Just for the fact that the league is now, there's such a depth of talent in the league where before, you know, there was enough kind of franchise really high level guys to you know, fill out maybe 15 teams, and then the other guys, you had guys like, I don't know, Mitch Richmond, who was a really fine player, but if he's your best player, you're not a contender. But nowadays, I think there's just so much talent, upper level talent, so much Mitch Richmond level talent, guys who are all stars and can operate as superstars in moments, but they're spread throughout the league. And there's 40 or 50 guys at the top of the league that are really, really, really good. And there are only 30 teams. So, yeah, I think we're almost past the stage. And also, offenses are so sophisticated. Defenses are better than ever, I think, as far as being flexible and being able to adjust. That there's not a LeBron in the league right now, right? One guy who just didn't break any defensive scheme. So I do believe that we are past that stage where there's a guy you can trade for, and all of a sudden you're like, yep, that guy made us a contender. Let me take that back. I think any team that gets Joker, because Joker's still in his prime, absolutely would be at least, you know, a couple moves from being maybe a contender. And maybe Giannis is that kind of guy. But, yeah, I just think the league is so deep and there's so much talent spread across the league. No one guy is going to be able to break teams anymore.
All right, let's end with this. We'll talk about the team that came up short of the Western Conference Finals again in the Minnesota Timberwolves. A lot of criticism being thrown at Anthony Edwards. Is it fair or unfair?
It's unfair. The guy is, what, year five, 23 years old, about to be 24. It's unfair, and I think it kind of highlights the toxic kind of environment of sports talk these days, right?
Yep, no, I agree.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's entertainment, and I get it. Everyone wants to rush to be right. Everyone wants to have the kind of the viral moment, which that's what a lot of this is. A lot of these shows, they want to have the guy talk for 30 seconds, and it goes around the internet, and the video clip is viewed a million times because it went viral. And look, he's 23. Think about what Michael Jordan was doing at 23. I think Mike, you know, just out of college or something at 23. And think about even a guy like Jason Tatum, right? Jason Tatum finally broke through, and he hit his prime, you know, 26, whatever it was, 25, 26, 27. So it's unfair. It sucks that Ant is being hyperanalyzed the way he is, you know, just because he didn't seem visibly upset. He didn't kind of grit his teeth and talk about, you know, how hurt he was. That's ridiculous. We all know what kind of player he is. He's already, I think, blown past a lot of projections of what people thought coming out of college. So, Ant is a great young player. He still has a lot of runway left in front of him. So I definitely think it's unfair.
I think it's always been there. I think the kind of scrutiny for a player that is polarizing has always been there. I remember, let's go back to Shaq, right? Shaq got a lot of unfair criticism thrown his way. And you go back to his Orlando Magic days. They got beat by the Bulls, right? They got swept out of the finals by Hakeem Olajuwon. You could argue he's one of the greatest centers of all time. He is one of the greatest centers of all time. He goes to L.A. They got beat. They got beat handedly by a Utah Jazz team that had two veteran Hall of Famers, right? And during that time, before the Lakers went on their three-peat, Shaq was the center of a lot of criticism, James. I think it's happened. I just think we're more in tune to it because now it's at our fingertips, right? You actually had to kind of seek out that type of rhetoric and narrative once upon a time, where today, all I got to do is pull my phone out of my pocket and boom, like you said, there you have it. People are looking for the viral moment, and they're such a prisoner of the moment because of it.
I 100% agree. And look what the name you just pulled out to compare it. You compared him to one of the, you know, top 20 NBA players of all time.
Yep.
Shaquille O'Neal. And that's why I say it's unfair. Right, because we look back at Shaq's legacy, and of course, Shaq was also a member of the notable fallout with the Orlando Magic about money and the Lakers swoop in, the big flashy deal with the Lakers and all that. So that's where the prism came from, right? He's Shaquille O'Neal. He was getting all that money, and they were losing, you know, in that against the Jazz. So this is same thing with Anthony Edwards. I think a lot of the proclamation of him the last couple of years, right? Oh, look at that. We see MJ in his game. We see, you know, and so even though it's not his fault, the expectations were elevated so high that with that comes insane expectations. And I also believe it's a little bit of the uncanny valley effect, where the Minnesota Timberwolves are really, really good, but the closer they get to contending status, which is 2 years in the West Conference Finals in a row, now all of their warts and flaws are even exposed that much more. And then you play the best team in the NBA, one of the best teams of all time as far as statistically, in the Thunder, and all of your warts are exposed
they're put on the Summer Jam screen. And so as good as the Timberwolves are, they do have some fatal flaws, and they were laid bare for the world to see. So it looks even worse for Ant Edwards and the Timberwolves.
He's James Holas, kind enough to join us each week to talk some NBA basketball. James, enjoy the weekend. Enjoy Game 6. Maybe by the time we talk again on Monday, maybe we're talking about an NBA final preview. Maybe not. We'll have to see next week, but I always appreciate the time.
My guy, so glad to talk to you, man. And sounds like you're doing big things out there. Looking forward to hopping on, and we'll talk about whoever's squaring off in the finals next week.
Can't wait. Can't wait for it, James. Thank you again.
You're the man, bro.
That's James Holas taking out the time to join us, putting the final touches on this week of Drive Time Sports. We'll be back to do it again on Monday. Have a very safe weekend. Enjoy Game 6 tomorrow night, and we will see you back here Monday afternoon, same time, same place. Be safe. We are out.